Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Chayim Dalet. Today's daf is being studied Da'ilun Nishmat Moshe Ben Miriam. Ruach Hashem Tanichinu Began Eden, donated by his family. Today's daf is being studied in memory of Dr. Nissim Shams Ben Esther, dedicated by Mr. Victor Tahan. Today's daf is being studied Le'alu Nishmat Acham Baruch, Rafael Ben Miriam, and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Ayin Gimal Amud Bet, and we are actually three lines from the bottom. And the Gemara says, Hazore haborer ve'atochen ve'amerakid. Zore, we learned, is winnowing. That's when they throw the wheat chaff mixture in the wind, and the wind causes it to separate, in order they can have the wheat kernels separate from the chaff. Borer is selecting, as she said, even selecting with one's hand. And merakid is also a form of sifting, where one is using a vessel, one is using a keli. So the Gemara asks, Hainu zore, hainu borer, hainu merakid. Meaning, those three melachot, borer, zore, borer, and merakid, are all the same melacha, basically. What it is, it's separating good from bad. It's separating two items. Borer is selecting good from bad. Merakeh is also doing it with the keli. Zoreh is doing it with the wind. Basically, it's the same principle working in three melachot. So why do you need three separate melachot? Technically, it should be one. That's the Gemara's question. Look at the bottom Rashi. Hainu zoreh, hainu borer, hainu merakeh. So Rashi just explains to us the word hainu, kemo henihu, which means it is it. Kelomar de mafliq lehu tana de matnitin letlat. Why does the Mishnah have to elaborate and make it three melachot? Vehalo kulan melacha haten. Basically, it's all the same melacha de mafrish ochel menapsolet. You're separating the good from the bad. So the Gemara says, Abaye v'Rava de Amri Tarvayu. So they both answered, Kol milta de Havya b'Mishkan. Any item that was indeed in the Mishkan, Afalgav de Ika de Damyale, even though there are other melachot that are similar to it, Hashivla. The Mishnah is going to count it. Bottom line, if it was in the Mishkan, it's going to be counted as an Av melacha, even though they might be similar. But since you added the Mishkan, these three different melachot at different stages, so therefore the Mishnah is going to write it. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, v'lechshav nameh kotesh. So if you're telling me you're counting all the melachot that were done in the Mishkan, there's another melacha you could have counted. And that's called kotesh. What is kotesh? Literally pounding. Which means one of the processes in making bread is that after they separate the chaff from the wheat kernel, they also pound it in order to get another type of shell off the wheat. So that happened also. So that should be also a melacha. If you tell me you're counting everything that was done in the Mishkan list, kotesh. Now, where in the Mishkan did they do kotesh? In the Mishkan, they actually did kotesh not by bread, because they didn't bake bread in the construction of the Mishkan. But they made dye, and look, we learned yesterday the dye that they made needed to be made from herbs that they planted. And therefore, in the preparing of the dyes, they also had to pound the herbs at some point in order to, let's say, get some type of shell off of it or whatever it may be like that. And therefore, as she says on the second line, V'lechshov nami kotesh, chitin ben machteshet. Why don't you list the case of grinding chitin in a grinder, lasir klipatan, to take off yet an additional shell, da'avya b'migdash b'samamarim, as related in the Mikdash, it was applied by the semamanim, the different herbs that they used to, spices that they used to make the dyes. El alav must be mishum de damya ledash. So then she says, you know why it didn't tell it to us? Because it's similar to the melacha of dash. Dash was threshing. What is threshing? Threshing, they would go and they would pound on the wheat in order to, like I said, separate it from its chaff. That was the melacha of dash. They would pound it. They would actually bang it. So therefore, what's the reason why the Mishnah didn't say kotesh? Because kotesh and dash are similar. So we're back to the question again. What are you telling me? Bezoreh, borer, miraked, and you're telling me, oh no, they were in the Mishkan. Well, kotesh was also in the Mishkan, but it didn't say because it was similar to dash. So then why tell me all these three? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Shechen ani ochel pito belo ketisha. Because a poor man eats his bread without pounding it. Seems only the rich people would pound it in order to make it very fine flour, which they call solit. But the poor guy doesn't eat his bread with such purity of the flour, we'll call it. And therefore, it still has some of the... It has the shell, the bran in it. It's not so clean as the rich man would eat it. So the Gemara answers, Amar Abaye shechen ani ochel pito belo ketisha. Because the ani, the poor man, eats his bread without pounding. And since aniim do not pound their wheat, therefore the Mishnah did not list it. What does that mean? Let's read Rashi. Shechen ani ochel pito belo ketisha. Lachen, afal gav da'avai b'mikdash. Even though indeed it was in the Mikdash, meaning in the Mishkan. Ve'av melachai. And as she says, it is an av melachah. Kevan de tana le dash. Since the Mishnah already said dash, which is threshing, lo tanala. So it didn't state the melachah, which is similar to it, ketisha. Ve'zore ubore umeraked. Also, then why did it list those three that are similar? Sidura de patninu, that is in the process of making bread. Vechevan de'avu b'mikdash, and since that was in the Mishkan, ve'acha atchil b'sidura de pat, and then the first 11 melachot on the 39 have to do with baking bread. Taninu, so therefore it stated them. Kedamnin gabe ofeh, just like we're going to learn, why did the Mishnah count ofeh? Ofeh is baking. There was no baking in the construction of the Mishkan. There was cooking. The cooking of the dyes. But since we want to give you the process of baking the bread, so therefore the first 11 melachot, even though in the Mishkan they were done by the herbs of the dyes, but we gave it an applicability to baking bread. Therefore instead of mevashel, we use the word ofeh. Because bishul and ofeh, bishul is just when you do it with liquid, when you cook liquid, and ofeh is dry baking. Therefore, it's synonymous technically. This is just by water, and this is by, let's say, dry baking. So therefore, the Mishnah specifically wanted to list all the processes in making bread. And therefore, the Havilah limitim mevashel, that she says, the children said mevashel, velo ofeh, to lava mevekdash, ela mishum sidura napat nakat. Why did it say ofeh? Because it wants to give us the processes in baking bread. And ofeh by bread is analogous to mevashel by the samamanim. Aval ketisha, but pounding, ashirim hu diltateh vechatsheh la'asot solet nekiyah. Only the rich guys, they pound their bread to make clean flour. Aval yaniim, the poor guys, lo tarheh, they don't have to bother themselves. Hilkach, lo tanala. The Mishnah did not list it. The Mishnah is only listing the definite processes that everybody does by bread. Doesn't mean that there's not another process. And could be there was Ketisha in the Mishkan. Umi Rashi says, Vadai Av Melachai. But certainly, it is an Av Melacha Ubechlal Dashu, which means when you read the Mishnah, you have to say it's part of Dash, threshing, But it seems from Rashi that he is calling quotation av melacha, which is very interesting. Which would come out, it seems, according to Rashi, technically you have 40 melachot over here. You have the 39 avot melachot that the Mishnah stated, and then he's telling you, you got the av melacha of Kotesh, which was a separate melacha that was done in the Mishkan by the Samamanim. It's just that we didn't list it, because our Mishnah was listing what's called Sidurat Depat, and since in the process of making bread, not everybody does Ketisha, the Aniyim don't do it, so therefore we left it out. But Zoreh, Borer, Miraked, everybody does those three in the baking of the bread, and they were also done in the Mishkan. So it comes out, what we're saying is true, that in Rashi, if let's say a guy would be Dash, he'd thresh, and then he would be Kotesh, it sounds like it would be Hayav too, which is a very big Hiddush, which is, comes out, there's really more than 39 Melachot on Shabbat. The Mishnah really left out Kotesh for a technical, because Aniim don't do it. But really it is an Av Melacha, like Rashi is telling us. In any event, so Gemara's question again was, why did the Mishnah list three similar types of selecting? Gemara's answer, because anything that was in the Mishkan, the Gemara lists as a Av. So the Gemara says, Kotesh, Kotesh is in the Mishkan. So the Gemara says, you're right. Kotesh was in the Mishkan. They did pound the Samamanim. However, our Mishnah, when it lists the first 11 are called Sidur HaDepat, the 11 processes to bake bread. How do I know the first 11 are referring to bread? From the fact that the 11th Melacha is Ofeh. Why did the Mishnah say Mevashel? Mevashel is really what was in the Mishkan. The fact that it plugged in Ofeh baking must be we're trying to look at the different things to make bread. And therefore, the Mishnah did not write Kotesh, because not everybody does Ketisha when they're making their bread. Who doesn't make Ketisha? Ba'ani. But really it was in the Mishkan. Now again, I want to remind you, in the Mishkan, they did not make bread. These first 11 were done by the Samamanim to make the dye. Horeh, Zoreya, Kotzer, Ma'amer. We just are applying them to a situation where you're doing those exact 11, but making bread. It's the same thing. Bottom line, those 11 melachot are asur, in no matter what capacity you're doing them. You just don't think that in the Mishkan they were planting wheat. They weren't planting wheat in the construction of the Mishkan. What were they planting? The herbs in order to make the dyes, in order to dye the cloths that they made the curtains of the Mishkan. So therefore, when they did the process of making the dyes, they also pounded the herbs. Also, why didn't it say pounding by us? Because our Mishnah is discussing those melachot in reference to baking bread. And since the Ani does not pound his bread, he doesn't matriach himself, as she says. He doesn't inconvenience himself to that level to make his bread so clean. So the Mishnah deleted it. But Borer, Zoreh, Miraked, those three everybody does in the baking of the bread. That's standard. So and it was in the Mishkan. So therefore the Mishnah counts it. Comes the Gemara and says, Rava Amar, Rava said, Hamani, who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi, it's Rabbi, the Amar, Avot Melachot, Arba'im Haser Achat. That he clearly said that there's 39 Melachot. V'i Hashiv Kotesh. And if you're going to count Ketisha, Havyale Arba'im, there's going to be 40. So he's giving you a new answer. He's telling you, really, Ketisha is not a melacha. And you know why our Mishnah did not count Ketisha? Because our Mishnah is going according to the opinion that says there was only 39 melachot. Whose opinion is that there's only 39? It's Rabbi. Later on, and earlier we learned that Rabbi made a derasha. It says, Ele ha-devarim. And we learned from the word Ele ha-devarim, which was said by Shabbat, Ele is the gematria of 36. Ele. Devarim is another 2, that's 38. Had Devarim comes to include 39. So therefore we notice 39. If you're going to count Ketisha, so there's going to be 40. So that doesn't leave Ketisha. So the Gemara says, wait. Why did you take out one of the 3 of Borer and put in Ketisha? Which means already if you have to get to 39. So why put 3 in the selecting Belachot and you leave out Kotesh? Why not make it fair? Which means take out, for example, Zoreh. Take out one of them. Now you'll have 2 by Borer and you'll have 2 by pounding. For example, you'll have Dash, which is also threshing, and you'll have Kotesh. At least it'll be fair to take 3 and just leave 1, 3 to 1, which means you put Zoreh, Borer, Merakid, and Dash, and you leave out Kotesh. That's not fair. Which means you get to 39, but make it balanced. So the Gemara says, so we have to go back to Abaye's answer, that the Mishnah is only listing melachot that were done in baking bread, that were done universally. Well, since the Ani doesn't bake his bread that way, so the Mishnah left out Ketisha. Let's just read the Rashi, Vilipuk Hada Mehanach. Take out one of the others, O Zoreh, O Borer, O Merakid. Davu Hada, which is all the same thing anyway. Lipuk Minayu Hada, take out one of those 3, Vilitni Hach, and list Kotesh. Dehach Yadif, it's better. Limitni Tarte Me'a, Betarte Me'a. List 2 from the Borer's family and 2 from the pounding family, meaning Dash and Kotesh. Instead of saying the same thing 3 times over, you have one that you didn't even repeat one time. So therefore the Gemara answered, you're right, that does not come in the answer. The answer has to be like Abaye said, that really we don't list Ketisha because it was not done by everybody in baking bread. And that's why we listed the other 3, because those are done in baking bread. Comes the Gemara now and discusses the laws of Borer, the laws of selecting. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Hayu lefanav mine ochlin. Guy had in front of him different foods. Mine ochalin. Borer ve'ochel. He's able to select from those foods and eat. Borer umaniyah. He's able to select for others as well. Velo yibror, but he could not select. Ve'im birer hayav hatat, and if he was borer, he's hayav hatat. Now this braita is cryptic. The braita is telling you 3 different laws. Law number 1, borer ve'ochel, could select and eat, permissible. Borer umaniyah, you could select for others. Many, I mean, you leave it for others to eat. You could select for yourself. You could select for others. Velo yibror, but don't make birira. And if you did, Yahya Khatat. So obviously these are 3 distinct cases that the Gemara is going to have to try to solve. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, my Kamar, what are you saying over here? What does this Braita mean? Abar Ula, so Ula comes to give the first interpretation. Hache Kamar, Borer ve'ochel lebo bayom. You could select and eat for that day. So long as it's for Shabbat, you're allowed to select. Now, he doesn't tell us how to select, but he just tells if you're selecting, obviously you have over here good and bad. You could select it so long as it's for Shabbat. And you could select for others. Even though you're not going to eat it, you could select for others so long as it's for Shabbat. But for tomorrow, for the next day, you cannot be borer. Then if you did, you're going to be hayav chatat. So that's the way the Braita is explained by Ula. 3 dinim. For today, you could borer for yourself. For today, you could borer for others. However, for tomorrow, hayav chatat. That's already, you're guilty. That's already forbidden. Matkifla Rav Hizda. So Rav Chisda asks a question. V'chi mutar le'efot le'bo bayom? Is it permissible to bake for today? V'chi mutar le'bashel le'bo bayom? Is it permissible to cook for today? So what is this business? If it's a melacha, it should be asur. Where do you ever see a dispensation that you can have a melacha that's asur, but if you're doing it for Shabbat, it's okay? We know cooking on Shabbat is forbidden. But do we say, but if you're cooking for today, it's okay? Of course not. We know baking is forbidden. But can a guy bake his halot if he's going to eat them today? Of course not. So why should Borei be any different? If you tell me selecting is forbidden, it's one of the melachot. But you tell me, but if you're doing it for today, it's permissible. He's like, I can't accept that. He says, but you Borei, if Borei is asur, right? Borei is a melacha. What is this business of Borei lebo bayom? How does that work? So he gives a different interpretation of the Braita. This is the second interpretation that we're going to get to the Braita. First one was Ula. Ela Amar Rav Chisda. Now we're going to hear Rav Chisda's version of the Braita. Borer ve'ochel pachot mekishi'ur. When did it say you could borer and eat? That's talking when you did it less than the prescribed shi'ur, which we learned. All the melachot on Shabbat have a certain measurement, right? So we're talking about that it's permissible if you were borer less than a gerogeret. Gerogeret is the size of a fig. Then why shouldn't it be asur? You're not doing the shi'ur. Borer u'miniyah pachot mekishi'ur. You could be borer for others, right? Leave it for others, also pachot mekishi'ur. Uch shi'ur lo yibror. But if it's the measurement of a gerogeret, don't select. V'im birer hayav hatat. Comes the Gemara and says, Matkif la Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef now challenges Rav Chisda's interpretation of the Braita. V'chi mutar le'efot pachot mekishi'ur? Is it permissible to bake less than the shi'ur? Which means we have a rule that says chatzi shi'ur asur. Which means, true, let's say the Torah prescribes a certain measurement. That measurement is to be hayav chatat. But we agree there's a principle that chatzi shi'ur, that half the measurement is also forbidden. So machloket, if the chatzi shi'ur is asur min haTorah, or is it asur from the rabbis? But bottom line, it's not permissible. So the Gemara is asking, Rabbi Yosef's asking Rav Chisda, you're telling me that if you select half measure, mutar, it's not so? But can I go bake now half the shi'ur? Of course not. So therefore, that cannot be a viable interpretation of the Braita as well. Now the only question is, what was Rav Chisda thinking? Right? When Rav Chisda came along and said, oh, we're talking about half shi'ur. So the Tosafot comes along and says, in the small Tosafot, V'chi mutar, V'ametaretz ha-kadadak de-pachot be-kishur havi derech achila. He understood that when you're being borer such a small amount, that's not considered borer at all. That's considered normal eating. Which means obviously we're talking about a guy's eating. Well, in eating, inevitably, to eat certain things, you have to select sometimes. So he's saying, if you're doing it in such a small measure, it doesn't even go on the charts as borer. That's considered normal eating habits. But the Rabbi Yosef came along and said, no. If it's a melacha, it's going to be asur even in half measures. So comes the Gemara and says, Elam Rav Yosef. So Yosef is going to give the third interpretation of this Braita. Borer ve'ochel biyad. Oh. When do we tell you could make borer? That's talking about when you're doing it biyad, with your hand. Borer u'miniyah biyad. And for that matter, it's permissible to be borer for others, so long as you're using your hand. Bekanun ubetamhoi lo yibror ve'im birer patur aval asur. But using a vessel to make borer, what type of vessels? Either a kanun or a tamhoi. Kanun is like a type of funnel that they would use. It's a keli, and a tamhoi is a type of big, like flat pot or plate that they used to make borer with. If you use those vessels to select with, then already it's patur aval asur. When he would be asur from the rabbis. Ubinapa ubekabra. However, with napa and a kabra, these are a sieve. Napa is a sieve, and a kabra would be a strainer or a sifter. these items are designated kelim that are specifically used for borer, lo yibror. Vimbirer, hayav hatat. So therefore, let's review Rabbi Yosef's interpretation of the Braita. When is borer permissible? Biyad, with your hand. Whether you're eating it for yourself, or you're maniyah la'acharim. When is it forbidden rabbinically? When you're using vessels that are really not designated for borer, that would be like a kanun and a tamhoi. That's the kanun, again, is the funnel, and the tamhoi would be the round plate. And when is it forbidden, meaning hayav hatat? That's when you're using items that are designated, definite kelim, that are used for separating, for selecting. That would be a napa, the kebara. So comes Gemara and says, matkif la rava minuna. Rava minuna comes along and challenges Rabbi Yosef's interpretation of the Braita. And he says, mide kanun v'tamhoi ketane. Does it say in the Braita anything about kanun v'tamhoi? Which means the Braita did not mention any type of vessels over here. The Braita just said borer ve'ochel. Now borer ve'ochel, obviously you're talking biyad. You're saying you're doing it with your hand. Now all of a sudden you jump from hand and then you introduce the case of hayav hatat. Okay, so hayav hatat, we'll say, was talking about with a napa, the kibara. Now, once already there's a middle stage over there, you have to tell it to me. You have to tell me that we're talking about now napa, the, you told me napa, the kibara, that's the last stage, hayav hatat. You have to tell me kanun v'tamoi. It's not written in the Braita. Where did you get all of a sudden to throw in this stage over here of kanun v'tamhoi? No mention of kanun v'tamhoi. We have three levels. Actually, two levels. The mutar and the hayav hatat. You came along now and told me, yeah, the mutar cases are biyad. The hayav hatat cases is talking about with an apa v'kabra. And then you threw in another level. You threw in patur aval asur in the case of what? Kanun v'tamhoi. Where do we see kanun v'tamhoi mentioned that you're throwing in this item? Wait. So the Gemara says, Ela marava menuna. Rabbi Menuna comes along and gives his version of the Braita. Borer ve'ochel. Oh. When are you allowed to be borer? Ochel mitoch psoret. That's talking about where you're taking the good from the bad. Now he's the first one to introduce that. Taking the good from the bad. Borer umaniyah. When are you allowed to borer for others? Ochel mitoch psolet again, when you're taking good from the bad. Psolet mitoch ochel, but if you're taking the bad from the good, lo yibror, then you're not allowed to be borer. Ve'im birer, hayab hatad. Then already it's going to be considered hayab hatad. So therefore, keep the braita all talking about even biyad, which means everything he's doing over biyad. If you're doing ochel mitoch psolet, permissible for yourself. If you're doing ochel mitoch psolet for somebody else, also it's going to be permissible. However, if you do psolet mitoch ochel, you take the bad from the good, then in all cases you're going to be hayav hatat. So we didn't introduce any vessels and things like that. Matkif la abaye. So abaye now comes along and asks, midi ochel mitoch psolet ketani. Again, does it say anything about ochel mitoch psolet? Which means that's also not said specifically in the Braita. So you're throwing in that ochel mitoch psolet. The same question that he had. He came along and asked, oh, what are you talking? Does it say anything about kelim? And now he comes along and says, no, it's talking about ochel mitoch psolet. So they ask on him, does it say anything about ochel mitoch psolet that you're throwing in that that's permissible? So Gemara says, Ela amar abaye, borer ve'ocher le'altar. He comes along and gives another interpretation. He says, you could make borer so long as it's being done for immediate consumption. Borer ve'ocher le'altar. U'borer u'maniyah le'altar. And you can also borer for others so long as it's for immediate consumption. Ve'lebo bayom, but it's for the day of Shabbat, meaning not for immediate consumption, lo yibro. V'imbirer na'aseh kibor le'otzar v'chayav hatat. Meaning, if you were borer outside of the immediate consumption, that's considered borer of chayav hatat. Why? Because the normal way of borer was done when you're storing it. Why would you make borer? Guy wants to put it in storage. Yeah? So before he would store it, he selects it, takes out all the good, and puts it in the storage. So doing it for later is similar to doing it for storage, which is the normal way of borer, and therefore you're going to be chayav hatat. So comes out in this last interpretation of the Braita, we have already the issue of the time. If you're being borer le'altar for immediate consumption, permissible. If you're doing it for later consumption, not immediate, we'll explain what immediate is in a second, then it would be chayav hatat. Now, before we go further, we have to do some of these Tosfotim, being that the subject of Borer is very complicated. I just wanted to read the sugya once, just to get the flow of the questions and the answers, and now we have to go back and give some analyzing towards it. Let's go to the first Tosfot. Hayu lefanav shne mine ochlim. Tosfot says the word garsinan. That's the text. Now whenever you see a Tosfot like that, he's implying to you here that there were different texts out there. So he's telling you the right text is Hayu lefanav shene mine ochlim. You had in front of you two foods. Now, where is there selecting if you have in front of you two foods? Selecting is usually good from bad. If the Braita's lashon is Hayu lefanav shene mine ochlim, two foods, what are you selecting? So Tosfot says a chidush. He says, even by two foods, it's shayach, good and bad. Meaning, the one that you want to eat would be considered the ochel, and the one that you don't want to eat at that time would be considered psolet. So that's a very important rule in the laws of Borer, that it's not only by foods that have a chaff to it or a psolet to it, even two edible foods. But since at this point you're not interested in eating one of them, the one that you don't want to eat would be considered psolet. That's Tosfot's Hidush. And he says it clearly. V'chen piresh rach, Sabenu Hananel, de'be'ochel mitoch ochel, shaycha berera. Even from food to food, it's shayach berera, she'borer oto she'eno hafetz le'echol, mitoch ote she'rotze le'echol. Means borer from what he wants to eat, from the item that he doesn't want to eat. The oto she'enu hafetz, for the item that he doesn't want, hashib solet legabe oto she'hafetz le'echol. Now, if you look at Rashi, however, Rashi has a dibura matchil, hayu lefanav mine ochlim garsinan, velo garsinan shene. Rashi goes out of his way to tell us in his commentary that the proper text in the Braita is Hayu lefanav mine ochlim. He says, don't say the word shene, implying that what? According to Rashi, if you have shne mine ochlim, that's not ochel and psolet. That's ochel and ochel. There's no din of borer bichlal. He's saying you have in front of you types of food, obviously with its psolet, with its unedible part to it, which means with actual psolet. That's why he didn't say shne mine ochlim. Because it's not the two foods that make an ochel and psolet situation according to Rashi. It's food and waste. Exactly, food and something good and something no good. Therefore he just said mine ochlim. And the obvious understanding is it's food with something that is no good, but it's not the food that makes psolet. If you learn like that, you have a humongous machloket here amongst the Rishonim and how to learn the deen of Borer. What application does it have? So that's the first machloket that we have. Now, I must point out that there are some of the acharonim that do not make this machloket between Rashi and Tosafot. As we'll see later in the Gemara, that it's possible that could be even that Rashi agrees to the Tosafot. Well, I'm explaining it according to those opinions that do want to make a machloket. Now, look at the Tosafot Matkif. Matkif la Rava Menuna. Mide kanun vetamhoi ketane. If you remember in the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef, in his interpretation of the Braita, he explained that borer is permissible beyad, whether it's for yourself or it's for others. However, with the kanun and tamhoi, it's going to be asur midrabanan, and with an apave kebara, it's going to be hayav hatat. That was Rabbi Yosef's version of it. So Tosfot matkif la Rava Menuna, right? So Rava Menuna asked, midi kanun v'tamhoi ketani? But does it say anything about kanun v'tamhoi that you're throwing that into the braita? Pirusha kunteras da'achanameh avimatzi lemefrach midi napa v'kabra ketani. You know, for the same money, Rava Menuna could have asked, does it say anything about napa v'kabra? It doesn't say anything in the braita about that either. Which means he only asked on one. Rabbi Menuna could have asked two questions. What are you throwing in? The Pabe Kabra, Kanun Vetamhoi. It's not written in the Braita. So that she learned why he only asked on one thing that wasn't stated, but he could have asked on both. Comes to us for and says, Vekasheleri. Maika Meshani Rabbi Menuna. Rabbi Menuna comes along and answers what? Okay, I'll give you my version. What was his version? Ochel mitok psolet. So the question is going to be on him. Does it say anything about ochel mitok psolet? So he Tosfot says, "Lidide nami tekshe midi ochel mitok psolet ketani." Jeez, what was Rabbi Menuna thinking? The same question he asked on Rabbi Yosef, he's guilty of. He asked on Rabbi Yosef, "Hey, you're throwing in facts that were not mentioned in the Braita." So he comes along, I'll give you what the Braita means. When it says mutar, it's ochel mitoch psolet. When it says asur, it's psolet mitoch ochel. It says that. You're guilty of the same thing that you questioned Rabbi Yosef against. That's Tosfot's question. So he says, I'm going to go to the answer. V'ned el Rabbeinu Yitzhak, de davka mitamhoi, mekanun v'tamhoi parich. So Tosfot says, no, Rabbi Menuna's question was only from kanun and tamhoi. V'achi pirusho, midi kanun v'tamhoi ketani, kevan denachat neperushe dine bererad de biyad mutar, ubenapa v'kavra chayav hatat, lo aya lo laniyak meleshonot kanun v'tamhoi prepatur aval asur. He's learning like this. The Braita is giving me two dinim. The mutar case and the hayav hatat case. There was never a section in there of patur aval asur. So from where did you come in now and stick in the kanun and tamhoi level over there? That wasn't in the braita. The braita gave us basically two dinim, the mutar case and the hayav hatat case. You came in and said, oh, you have a third case. You have the case of kanun and tamhoi. So Rabbi Menuna comes along and says, but in his answer, he solves that. He says, the mutar case is ochel mitoch psolet, and the hayav hatat case is psolet mitoch ochel. I'm good. I gave you two dinim, the mutar case and the hayav hatat case. He wasn't saying, you're throwing in information that wasn't said, because he's also throwing it. Everybody has to throw in information over here to explain the braita. His question was, from the fact that you see the braita gave a mutar in the Hayuf Hatat case, where are you coming off to throw in a kanun v'tamhoi, which is patur aval asur? According to Rabbi Menuna, he's good. Why? Because bottom line, he's giving you the ochel mitoch psolet on the mutar side, and the psolet mitoch ochel on the Hayuf Hatat side. So that's the way he answers that. Now, in the next Tosfot tells us another Hiddush. According to the version of Rava Menuna, he allows ochel mitoch psolet. Tosfot just speaks out that ochel mitoch psolet is only permissible. What's the reason why ochel mitoch psolet is mutar? Let's analyze that. Why should good from bad be mutar? So Tosfot says, because that's not the normal way to be borer. It seems the normal way to be bore would be what? Psolet, take out the bed. So since you're doing ochel mitok psolet, that doesn't constitute normal selecting, and therefore it's not a problem. However, Tosfot does speak out that it depends on the quantity of the ochel and the psolet. So he says like this, Ipsolet miruba ala ochel. If let's say you have more psolet than ochel, then already the normal way would be is to take out the ochel. Because there's more psolet, just take out the good. So in that case, it would be the derech. So the case of ochel mitoch psolet, you have to say where there's more ochel than psolet, which means then already that would be not the derech, and that would be permissible. You have more ochel than psolet, the normal way would be is to take out the psolet. However, you're doing ochel mitoch psolet, so that would be not considered derech me'ah. So that's Tosfot goes into the subject of the quantities of when ochel mitoch psolet is not considered the derech, and when even in some cases it would be considered the derech, meaning if you had less ochel than psolet, so it would be the derech just to pull out the ochel. So that would be the derech. So he discusses the quantity level.
But,
now,
but he wouldn't hold that that's a sur if you're mistaken.
Again, though, I'm not going to get into details of halakha over here. I'm just discussing principles that are discussed by the Rishonim. The principle of quantity, that's the subject of this Tosfot. Now, the Gemara goes further. Gemara says, we go back to the Gemara. Amaru Rabbanan kameh derava. The rabbis said this in front of Rava, which means this interpretation of Abaye to the Braita. Abaye's interpretation was Borer is permissible if it's for immediate use, and Borer is forbidden if it's for later use. No, Bobayom, even not the Altar, not for immediate use. So they said that interpretation over to Rava. Amar Lehu, he said, Shapir Amar Nahmani. He said, you know, Nahmani, that was what Rava used to call Abaye, he said, Nahmani said good. Meaning Rava liked that interpretation of the Braita. Comes the Gemara and says, Hayu lefanav shne mine ochlin. You have in front of you two foods. Ubirer ve'achal, ubirer ve'niyah. Person was borer for himself, or he was borer for somebody else. Rav Asher matni patur. Rav Asher says, in this braita that we're quoting right now, patur. Rabbi Yirmiyah medifni matni hayav. And this braita, Rabbi Yirmiyah says hayav. So the Gemara says, Rav Asher matni patur. How could Rav Asher say in this braita that if a person is borer, he's going to be patur, ve'atani hayav? Our braita said, the first braita that we quoted above said hayav. Now, let's analyze for a second. Obviously, we're not talking about over here where you're being borer in the permissible way. That she clearly says that, which means we're not talking about you being borer for immediate consumption. Because if you're being borer for immediate consumption, we just learned that is mutar. So Rav Asher would not say patur. So what's the case that he must be saying patur on when you're doing it for later? If you're doing it for later, but our braita said doing it for later is hayav. So how then could you say patur? That's the Gemara's question. Rav Asher, you're learning what? The case of borer for later is what? Patur. However, our braita said what? Hayav. That's the question of Rav Asher. So the Gemara says, "La kashya, no question. Ha bekanun v'tamhui, ha benapa v'kabra." Can they wait? I tell you, know what Rav Asher was talking about? You know why he said it's patur? The reason why he said it's patur because he was talking about a kanun v'tamhui. He was talking about using those not so designated vessels of borer. And when you use the kanun v'tamhui, which are not designated for borer, so those items are going to be patur avalasur. But if you use the bright above that said hayav hatat is talking about using a napa v'kabra, using the designated vessels. Now we have to understand exactly what he was saying over here. That's the words. Now we have to understand the meaning of this Gemara's question and answer. The Mashiach came along and quoted a din in the Braita. The Braita said, you have in front of you two types of foods. And what's the din? If you bought air for yourself, or you bought air for others, that Hashem says patur. So right away, he cannot be talking about you doing it for immediate consumption. Because he would not say patur. Because otherwise it would be mutar. So patur obviously is for later. Now we know for later, our Braita has clearly said, Hayav hatat. Now Hashem can't argue on a Braita that we have over here. So the Gemara answers, no, very simple. He was talking about when you're doing it with a napade kabra, then we say that's the rabbinical level, that's patur aval asur. And our Braita was talking about a napade kabra, that's the doraita type of bore. Therefore you consider it hayav hatat. Very nice. Comes the Tosafot. Vatanya hayav. Pirush bekunteras, that she understands. Da'ainu braita de le'ayel. Right, we're challenging Rav Asher's to our braita, to the only braita that we know, the braita that we started the sugya of. Ve'kasheleri de le'may de mukmina la benapa ve'kabra. So now you tell me the braita that we had this whole time is talking about benapa ve'kabra. Mashma dafka lebo bayom asur. Avar le'altar afilu benapa ve'kabra shari. It comes out. When is napave kabra hayav hatat? Only when it's for later. Implying that if you use a napave kabra for immediate use, it'd be permissible. That's how it comes out according to this. Which is the way that she set it up, it comes out that the braita that we have, napave kabra, when is it hayav hatat? When it's for later. Implying what? That if you did the napave kabra for immediate use, it'd be mutar. Tosfot says, that cannot be. He quotes Kemeriyot all over the place. Impossible. Napave kabra, I don't care how you use it, when you use it, it's always hayav hatat. So therefore, that she, the way you set up this question, you're leaving now with a very, very, very strong problem. Because if you tell me the braita that we've been discussing above is discussing napave kabra, so that means throughout the braita was discussing napave kabra. And it's telling me what? Only when it's for later is it hayav hatat, implying that for its immediate use, permissible. Can't be. So Tosfot says, in understanding this question and answer, that obviously they weren't challenging Rav Asher from our Braita. They were challenging him from a different Braita. Where is his Braita? We don't know where his Braita is. But clearly that other braita says that you, the use of an apave kabra is always forbidden. Whether it's for immediate use or whether it's for use of later. And how does this manifest? Let's just read it in the Tosafot. Look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. V'nir'el l'ri. The braita de le'ael ayri beborer biyad. Really, I'll tell you, our braita is always talking about biyad, being borer with your hands. Like Abayi explained, borer biyad will tell you if it's ochel mitoch psolet, it's permissible. If you're borer biyad psolet mitoch ochel, it's going to be hayav hatat. That's our braita. Don't confuse our braita with napave kabras. Ve'acha demukmila benapave kabra. But now Agamara said no. But there's a braita that's talking about napave kabra. Braita haritihi. It's a different braita. Ve'afil le'altar hayav hatat. And therefore it comes out according to the Tosafot that the Gemara quoted Rav Asher. Rav Asher said patur, right? But we learned hayav. Meaning a different braita. We learned hayav, so we'll say, yeah, the braita that said hayav was talking about napave kabra in all cases. And they said patur, he was talking about a kanun, that's always patur. Our braita that we've been quoting the whole time, that's biyad. So comes out, the Tosfot concludes, of the three conditions that you need over here. Number one, vessels always asur. Kanun v'tamchoy v'rabanan. Napa v'kabra de'oraita. Those are out. The only way you can be born is going to be biyad. Number two, we see from Abayir, the only way you can do it is ochel mitoch psolet. Only the good from the bad. Number three, only the altar. Only for immediate consumption. However, it's for later, it's also going to be asur. So therefore, it comes out after the whole setup of the Gemara, we conclude with the three rules of Borer. And they are Beyad, Miyad, and Ochel Mitoch Psolet. If you're doing it for later consumption, or if you're doing it with a vessel, you can even get to Chayuv Chatat. And if you're doing it psolet mitoch ochel, even Beyad will be Chayav Chatat, based on the way Abaye explained the Braita and the way Tosfot understood. The Braita is only Beyad. So it's possible you could be Borer Beyad and still be Chayav Chatat. How? If you take psolet mitoch ochel. Now, that being said, for later. Yeah, for later. Now, what does the altar mean? So Rabbi Hananel interprets the altar, which is immediate, means for that seuda, which means sitting down at that seuda for the consumption, for the upcoming meal, that's already considered the altar, as opposed to being borer this meal for the next meal, which means it's for the upcoming meal that you're about to sit down and eat. For that, the Gemara tells a story. Gemara says, there was a story. Ki atar avdimi. When the Rav Dimi came, where did Rav Dimi come from? He came from Eretz Israel. Amar, he said, Shabbata de Rabbi Bai Havai. It was the Shabbat of Rabbi Bai. Rabbi Bai was in charge of serving the Hachamim. It seems they had a certain turanut, they had a certain system where the different students would be the ones that would serve the Hachamim every Shabbat. So Rabbi Bai was up. Ve'ikli'u Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi. So Rabbi Bai came to the yeshiva, and now Rabbi Bai serving them. Shada kamayu kalkela deperi. He threw in front of them a basket of fruit. It seems there was a basket of fruit in there, and she says there was leaves in there. So there was ochel and psolet mixed together. So he went and he poured it in front of them. Velo yada'na, he says, we don't know why he did that. Im mishum desabar ochel mitok psolet asur. Unless he held ochel mitok psolet as asur, because he didn't even want to take out the good from the bad. That's why he just poured it in front of them, so it just happened by itself. Or he really held ochel mitok psolet as permissible, but he just wanted to serve it to them in a generous way. So how did he do it? He poured it in front of them, so there was ayin yafa, it was served to them in a generous way. Now the only question with this story is, what are you talking about? We just said ochel mitok psolet for immediate consumption is mutar. That's a braita. So what are you telling me? We don't know if he holds ochel mitok psolet is asur. But weren't they sitting down to eat? That's immediate consumption. Why would he say it? Where do we see now that there's even a side to say, even for others is permissible, we said. Boreru miniyah, right? We understood boreru miniyah means fathers. So long as for immediate consumption, what's the sefek in the Gemara? So Tosfot comes along and explains that as well. In the bottom Tosfot. Tosfot says, Velo yadana, we start Pirush. Lo yadana, ma shelo biriram techila, kodim shebi'am nifnehem. Which means, we were talking before he brought it to them. Which is for sure when he brought it to the table, he definitely would be able to give them ochel mitoch psolet. The Sheila was over here, why didn't he do it from before the meal? Which means, because then already it's a question. We never saw that before the meal, maybe that's not considered la'altar, that's not considered immediate. So the Sheila is, before the meal, why didn't he come and separate it? That's already the question. Tosfot continues and says, "Aval en nefaresh ma shelo biriram b'shat sheniach lefnem." There's no shela why he didn't make birira at the time that he gave it to them. Timken, my kamar, im mishum tkasvat ochem mitok psolet asur dan lekol ha'am asherin ochem mitok psolet la'altar. Everybody agrees that at the time of the serving, he could have gave them the ochem mitok psolet. The shela they were saying, before he got to the table, he didn't separate it. So the question was, does he hold this asur at that stage? Before you get to the table, that's not considered la'altar. Or he wanted to bring it in the basket, ayin yafa, he wanted to serve it in a generous manner. So that's the rule of Borer. And the Gemara continues, three lines from the bottom on ayin dalid, amud rishon, Hizkiya amar, haborer turmusim mitoch psolet shelahen hayav. Turmusim are a type of beans. The Gemara is going to tell us that this bean needed a lot of cooking. The Gemara is going to say you needed to cook it 7 times actually in order to make it edible. So the Gemara says, "Haborer turmusim mitoch psolet shelahem." If a person selects these beans, these turmusim, from the psolet, from amongst their waste, hayav. So then one is going to be hayav. So the Gemara says, Lema kasabar Hizkiya ochel mitok psolet asur? Does that mean he's coming to say that when you take the good from the bad, Hizkiya is going to say that's asur? Because till now we learned, according to Abaye, that if you're taking ochel mitok psolet, so long as you're eating it for immediate consumption, the altar, so we said that's permissible. Now Hizkiya is coming on to say a chidush. He's saying even if you take the turmus, which is the edible part of it, and you take it from its psolet, it is asur. Why should that be asur? Does he mean to say that even good from bad is going to be asur? So the Gemara says, no, shani turmusim. Turmusim are different. Deshalke le shiv'a zimneh. Because you have to cook them 7 times. V'ilo shakle le. We'll read that girsa first. And if you don't take them out, masrach. They spoil. Uksolet mitoch ochel dami, and therefore it's considered as if you're taking bad from good. Now this last piece of Gemara, there are different ways to explain it. We will read Rashi inside together. Rashi, top line. Deshalki leshiva zimnin. You cook it 7 times. Limtaken. In order to fix it. Which means they become edible by cooking them that many times. V'ilo shaklele. לאוכל מתוך הפסולת, מתוך שורח ונימוח על ידי שנשלק הרבה. What happens is because the fact that you cook it so many times, it becomes very, very soft. And therefore it's really hard to take them out and eat them in that soft state. So what happens? Masrach. Furthermore, they become, literally masrach means spoiled, but they become ruined if you leave them in the pot after the 7th time you cooked it. Ve'ilkach ochel nameh kozeman she'urav bo havi kepsolet. Which means, even though technically they're edible, but the Gemara's mahmir and is going to give it the status of psolet. Vashi, umiyu ochelu, even though it is technically edible in its food, ומחמירין עלה למהווה ההוא דשקיל כפסולת מתוך אוכל. We're mahmir to say, since by keeping it in the pot after the 7th time, it becomes spoiled, so to speak, even though technically when you're taking out the turmus, you're really taking out food from food, but the hachamim are stringent to say what? We're going to give it a status of psolet, and therefore it's as if you took the bad from the good. I guess the reason why it is the... No, it's edible. The turmus is really edible. But you're taking out these turmusin that were cooked 7 times. When you take it out, it seems they're so soft. So we give it a it ruins them, so to speak. So we give it a status of psolit, even though it is edible. That was the chumrah. You're taking out the cooked turmusim from the pot. Which means you only have turmusim in the pot.
What's the psolit?
The good is the food that stays in the pot. The stuff that stays in the pot is going to be considered ochel. But the stuff, let's say 100 turmusim in a pot. You cooked it 7 times. Right? It's all one species here, according to the first explanation of Rashi. And by taking it out, after the 7th time, the stuff you're taking out, they're going to give it a status of psolet. Why? Because as she says, by leaving it in there, it becomes spoiled. So we're going to give it the humrah both ways. The stuff you take out, we're going to give a deen of psolet. The stuff that stayed in, we're giving it a deen of ochel. ochel. And therefore it's as if you took psolet mitoch ochel. Again, the logic of Rashi is because since they become so soft, so when you take them out, it's like they become so mushy, so they're not so good, let's say, to take them out that way. And Tosfot Rashi brings a different explanation. Haborer turmusim mitoch psolet shelahem means Mrs. Shalkan Pamahat. This is only talking, he says, now you just cook them once. And then what do? Mimarkinu ma'arino tanamayim. You empty out the water. That's how they would cook these turmusim. They would put them in water, boil the water. After they cooked it once, they would empty out the water. You know, clean out the buggy ones, whatever they would do. Like that she says, uborera mitulaot shlein. You take out the different ones that are bug infested. Just like when you make fool, he says. That's the type of beans. Same process. V'chemechot pa'am u'pa'am. V'ze borera ochel u'maniach tapsolet. Now, v'ilo shalkile, if you're not going to shalke, means cook them seven times, masrach, which is they're going to become spoiled. According to this text, it doesn't say v'ilo shalkile, if you're not going to take, it says shalkile, if you're not going to cook them, which means we're talking about turmusim that you cook, let's say, three or four times. Now, immediately you have to cook it another four times in order to get it fully cooked. If you leave it at that state, the turmusim become spoiled. They're not good. And we're talking about turmusim that are in a pot with other stuff, according to this version. Therefore, other foods. Meat, let's say. So therefore, the meat that's in the pot, so to speak, would be called ochel. These turmusim that are not fully cooked yet are called psolet. And therefore, by taking out a turmus that's not yet cooked seven times, it's obvious it would be psolet mitoch ochel. That's the second version of Rashi. Let's just read that inside. Hilkach, no, I guess the Chiddush of the Gemara is that partially cooked turmusim are not considered ochel yet. I mean, it's considered still psolet. It's not considered yet ochel. Hilkach, Mrs. Shalkum pa'amayim v'shalosh, as she continues, if you cook them, let's say, two or three times, hashiv lepsolet. Why? Ho'il v'ishaviklu, because if you leave them in that state, achi delo adar shaluklu, you're not going to go return and cook them, masreche, they're going to spoil. U'shu notlan mitok sh'ar minim, if you're going to take them, remove them from amongst other species, now this word giru'in does not make sense. Rashid and the Got B'tziyunim says gara'inim, he changes it to. I mean, if you're going to take it out from other species of legumes, let's say, that are in the pot, the other stuff that's in the pot is not spoiled. The gamalu bishulayu panishonan. The other legumes that you cooked in the pot, they were finished the first time you cooked them. So only the other turmusim that need seven times. Okay? Now that's the opinion of Rashi. Then he brings a third opinion, the Rabbeinu Alevi Garis, the Ishaklile, if you're going to take them out, he has that girsa also. Shaklile, if you're going to take them out after they were fully cooked, this version holds. Masrach, meaning kishenotlo nimoach bin itzbeotav v'nimas, meaning they disintegrate in the guy's hand. They become so soft that they break. So therefore, hilka ka'ud shakila v'kipsolet v'nishar v'yochel ad shozer v'notlo. So therefore, so long as this, according to the third version, they're fully cooked, let's say, it's just that it seems you can't handle these with your hand. When you take them out with the end, they just fall apart. How would you eat these things? I guess with a spoon or something like that. By taking them out, they're just going to fall apart. So therefore, let's review the three explanations. Bottom line, Hezkiah said, the guy's borer turmusim. So he's taking the turmusim out of the pot. It's considered borer. It's not because it's ochel mitoch psolet. No, it's really psolet mitoch ochel. The only question is, what makes it psolet mitoch ochel? The rabbis of Rashi, meaning Rabbeinu Halevi, which is the last thing he quoted, says the fact that they're so cooked, they become so soft, they disintegrate in your hands, so that's considered psolet, and the stuff that remains in the pot is considered ochel. That would be considered borer. Rashi himself, in his second shot, said, no, we're talking about turmusim that were not so cooked. You cook them three or four times. And if you leave them in that state, they're going to be masal, they're going to spoil. And you have other stuff in the pot that was cooked. So the pot, and it's fully cooked and edible. So the stuff that remains in the pot is considered ochel. The turmusim that you're taking out is considered psolet. So therefore, it's psolet mitok ochel. First explanation in Rashi is also working with the ilo shakli, mean the fact after they're cooked, If you leave them in the pot the way they are, even after they're fully cooked, it seems they spoil. Now, even though technically right now they're edible, since they are going to get spoiled, we're mahmir to treat them now as if they're spoiled. So it comes out, according to the first version, you would not be able to eat turmusim that are fully cooked in a pot on Shabbat. Because whatever you're taking out, the rabbis are giving you the deen of psolit. Because if you would leave it in that state, they would become masrah. They would become spoiled. And the stuff that's inside, they're going to give it a deen of okay. So those are basically the three explanations.
There's nothing else in the pot.
No, according to the first and third explanation of the Mefarshim, it's only turmusim in the pot. It's just part of the turmusim are called okay, and part of the turmusim are called psolit. It comes again when I continues. That tochen. Now we discuss grinding. Amara papa, hayman defarim silka. Somebody that goes and chops up or dices or minces silka. Silka would be beans. I'm sorry, beets. Beets. B-E-E-T-S. Hayab mishum tochen. He's going to be hayab mishum tochen. Comes to Tosafot and says, Davka besilka shayach betechina, avashar ochlin chari. Tosfot says this specifically by beets. It seems the Mefashim explain because beets cannot be eaten raw. So they would dice them before they would cook them. So therefore their dicing is considered techina. It means they would mince them in it to a certain degree. Amar Rab Menashe, Rab Menashe comes along and says, Hayman de salit silte, hayab mishum tochen. Salit silte, Rashi says, Etzim dakim, he chops wood into small pieces, not into sawdust, but into, let's say, splinters. So that's also going to be considered grinding. I mean, he's taking the wood and he's grinding it into smaller pieces. That's considered tochen. What is the basic part Shabbat? He's hayav mishum tochen. That's why he's hayav mishum tochen.
How could he do that on Shabbat in the first place?
How could he do any of these things? How could he do any of the talam melachot? The guy's a rasha. The guy's a, he did it b'shogeg. He'll bring a korban hatat.
Forget about the Hakana issue in the first place.
Forget about Hakana. Why did you wake up now? How does a guy cook on Shabbat and he's Hayav? How does a guy do anything? How does a guy Motsim and shoot the shoot? We're talking about people over here that either didn't know it's Shabbat or they're busy. He's in the Hayav. So Hayav Mishum Tochen. Amar Rav Asher. Ikapid Amishchata. If when the guy's chopping up the wood, he's further concerned about the measurement, which means he's cutting them to a certain size, then Hayab Mishum Mehatech. Then he's also Hayab because of the Isur of Mehatech. Mehatech means cutting. When they used to cut the leather, they used to cut it into certain sizes in order to use it for whatever need they had. So when you're cutting wood and you're trying to make it into a certain size, you'd be Hayab Mishum Mehatech. Comes the Gemara and says, Ve'halash Ve'ha'ofer. Lash, we said, is kneading. Ofer is baking. Amar Rav Papa. Shavak tanadi dan bishul samamanim dava b'mishkan. Venakat ofer. We learned this earlier. Our tana, he left the melachat bishul, cooking, which actually wasn't the mishkan. Bishul was by the samamanim, by the dyes that they used to cook. Dava b'mishkan. Venakat ofer, and you chose ofer. You chose baking, which wasn't in the mishkan. So Gemara answers tanadi dan sidurat depatnakat. Our tana is following the order of baking bread, and we said there's 11 processes in making the bread. The last process being the melacha of ofer. Comes Gemara says Amar Rav Acha bar Rav Avira. Hayman deshada sichta laatuna hayav mishum mevashel. Which means this fellow that throws in a sikhta, Rashi says, what is sikhta? Yated lah. It is a moist peg or a moist piece of wood. Yated is like a, either you call it a beam or a peg, and he takes it and he throws it into the fire. Why is he throwing it into the fire? Because he wants to dry it up in order that it will become hard. So the Gemara says, Hayav Mishum Mevashel. They're going to get him on Shabbat because of cooking. Now, not that he's cooking the moisture that's inside the wood. It's considered the Isur of Mevashel, the fact that he's hardening the wood. So the Gemara says, Peshita, Gemara says Pashut. Now we have to understand, why is it Pashut? We don't even understand why it should be Mevashel in the first place, while the Gemara is going along and saying, what do you mean? Peshita, of course it should be considered cooking. So the Gemara said, let's just finish and then we'll explain. Because you might have thought, since his whole intention is what? To make the wood hard by extracting its moisture, the wood becomes hard. But the Hiddush is the mirfar rafeh, that on the way to it to become hard, first it becomes softened, the adar kamit, and then it becomes hardened. Now, what is mevashel? Let's understand the menacha mevashel. Mevashel is cooking. What does cooking basically do? It takes a piece of food that was hard, and by cooking it on the fire, it softens it. So therefore, we're going to apply mevashel not only to food stuff, but we're going to apply the principles that when you take something that's hard and you soften it through the agent of fire, that's going to be called bishul. Jeez, we're expanding our base of the products that are shayach to bishul. So now we're saying a guy puts the wood into the fire, sayah bishul. So the Gemara says peshita, which means the Gemara, and the thought right away, of course, doesn't it become soft? Gemara said, no, we thought that since the guy's whole intent was to make it hard, so therefore, maybe you're not going to get him on Bishul, because that's his intent. Gemara said, no, but since the only way it can get hard is it must get soft first, and it must go through getting soft before it becomes hard, which means when the water gets extracted, so therefore it's going to be high up. Let's see the Rashi over here for a second. Rashi says, de marfeh rafeh al yedeh homa'ur, the water that's in the piece of wood extracts, only after the water goes out, it becomes hard. When it becomes soft originally, it is considered its bishul. Let's do the Tosafot for a second. The second Tosafot on the daf. Now the tema neshirei manaka mechaven haki pirusho ve'en bo bishul klal, which means I might have thought, Tosafot's explaining Da'av Amina, I might have thought that true, let's say it's becoming soft at the end, or in the process, I should say. But maybe since his end game is, he wants to become hard, so maybe that's not Shiach Bishul. Maybe Bishul means where your end game is, where you want it to remain soft. But here where your end game is, you want it to get hard, maybe I don't care what happens in the middle. Kamash Malan, no. Bottom line, since to get it hard, it's got to get soft first, so therefore, that's going to be subject to Bishul. Comes Gemara and says, Rava barabuna, Amar Rava barabuna, Hayman de artah kufra, a person that heats up kufra, that would be tar, Hayab mishum mevashel. So in that case also he's going to be Hayab because he is mevashel. So Gemara says, Peshita. What's Pashut? What's the Hiddush? Ma'u de tema, kevan de hadar de ikusha, since eventually that tar is going to become hardened at the end, emalo, I might say that what? Even though it got softened in the process, since its end result is going to remain, it's going to come hard, kamash ma'lan, that what? No, indeed, bottom line, since you softened it at the time of the cooking, you are going to be hayav. Comes the Gemara and says, Amarava, Hayman de Avad Havita. A guy that makes a barrel on Shabbat, Hayav Mishum Sheva Hataot. Barrel making is subject to seven different melachot, and if you did them b'shogeg, you'll be hayav seven hataot. What are these seven hataot? So Rashi lists them first. Let's read them inside. Sheva hataot, Tibuna Matril. Number one, tochen haregabim v'shochakan hadek, havi tochen. First you need to get earth to make the barrel. So you get the hard earth and you grind the clumps of it into fine pieces. So that's already the first melacha of grinding. That's tochen. Now that you have the dirt, uborer atzirurot agasot metochan. Now you have to select all the rocks and stones that are in the dirt. That would be Bore, which is selecting, Hareshtayim, Ummarkidim binapa. Then you take your napa out, your sieve, and you sift it. That's the melacha of Merakid. That's also selecting. Umegabelatit, you add water now, and make a dough out of it, make the paste out of it, the clay, the hainu lash. When you add the water and you make the paste out of it, that's considered kneading. Umemareya hatit kishosea golem shiachalak. Then you smoothen the mixture out in order so it'll be smoothing. Harem imachek, that's smoothing. Umavir taur bekevshan. Then you have to put it in the fire, so that would be lighting the fire. That's mavir, making a fire. Umtzarefo betocho, and then you harden it in the fire. Hare mevashel. So that would be considered mevashel. So you see the way mevashel works. According to this, it works both ways: taking something soft and making it hard, or taking something hard and making it soft. In this case over here, the pottery that you made, the habit, was actually was soft before you turned out. But putting it in the kiln or the fire over here, so it makes it chazak. And just before we continue, just see one more point of Rashi. So he says, "Chiyubad dechofer leka." What about chofer? Which bottom one? Did you have to dig the dirt out of the ground to get to it? That's the first thing. So he says, "Eno tzarich ela dechofer leka." Eno tzarich ela afra. Chofer, you only hayav when you need the hole. But in this case, you don't need the hole. You need the dirt. That's a melacha shenat tzarichal gufal. And even according to the Biyuda, who holds melacha shenat tzarichal gufal, generally is hayav. Here we'll say patur because it is a kilkul. In any event, Rashi enumerated seven different hata'ot in the process of habit making. Comes the Gemara and says, Tanura hayab bishum shmona hata'ot. If you make an oven, ya hayab bishum shmona, there's eight different hata'ot. What is the eight hata'ot? We read Rashi. Rashi dibura matchil, tanur, hayab shmona. De la'achar shetzarfo bekevshan utach alav tefela, shiye'ab bechomo mitkayem. Meaning in the oven, it's the same seven processes that we mentioned by the barrel, because it's made out of clay. And then, what did they do? It's made out of dirt, earthenware, I should say. Mm-hmm. And then the last process, number eight, is after the oven is made, they insulate it with another layer of tar or insulation of dirt in order to keep the heat inside. So that would be the melachav makebe patish, which means you're adding final touches, which means once the tanur is made, now you're adding a final touch to it. So that is number eight, the insulation that they would insulate the inside of the oven. Amar Abaye, hayman de'avad chalta. A guy that makes chalta is a basket. It's a woven basket. Hayav ahat esle hata'ot. Is chayav 11. V'ihayte lefumeh. And if he makes a hem around its opening, which means he makes a rim around the opening in a barrel, hayav shlosh esle hata'ot. And then already ups it to 13. Now let's go see the 11 hata'ot that one is subject to by making a woven basket. Rashi, halta, second wide line, kaveret shel kanim. That's a basket made out of reeds. Hayav yud aleph. Let's go one step at a time. Zomer akanim. First of all, he has to prune the reeds from the tree. Vud sarich lahem, and he needs them. Now we learned earlier that when you zomer, when you prune, and you need the item that you're pruning, you hayav too. You hayav for pruning because that motivates the growth for the reeds that are left. And Yechayav Mishum Kotzer, because that is reaping, right, harvesting, like a person harvests wheat, he cuts it and he keeps it. So we said, Hayav Mishum Kotzer, Umishum Noteya. Kotzer is harvesting, and Noteya would be planting, because the pruning inspires the growth. That's two. Asfam Yahad, then he gathers the reeds together. Hareze Me'amer. Right, that's gathering, that's me'amer, collecting. Birer yafot, now he selects the good ones, hareze borer. Hechnika, and then he smoothens them out, hareze me'machek, that's smoothing, that's five so far. Asa'an dakot, me'achat shtayim o shalosh, from one reed you split it, you made two or three out of them, hareze tohen, that's considered grinding. What is grinding? Making from one item, many pieces, smaller pieces. Hatkan b'mida, and then you cut them into certain measurements. Hareze mehatech. That's considered mehatech. They used to do by the leather. They would cut it into certain measurements. So far we're at seven. Hesech hasheti. Now in the weaving process, You have to set up the strips that you have now in order to create the situation of weaving. So we learned Mesech was setting up the beam of the warp. So here also, you're setting up the strips now of Kanim in order to prepare them for weaving. That is a Mesech. Arag achat lemala v'achat lemata kedei la'amido hare oseh shte batei nirin. Which is, we learned one of the melachot in Shabbat was setting them up in the loom, which means when you place them in the holes of the apparatus that used to hold the strings in these holes. They were called batenirim, as you saw in the picture in the back. So why would they do that? They would do that in order to now allow these strings, this thread, to rise up and down so they can stick the weave across it, so they can stick the weft across it. So the same thing over here. In this case now, when he sets up the reeds that he has to prepare them. First he lines them up. And then he has to create it so he can, one is on top of each other, so he can, exactly, so he can stick now the weft, that's the one that goes across it. So that would be like, you're not sticking in any holes over here. You're not using a loom over here. But it's the same function of the loom. The loom allows, sticking it in the holes, the batin allows the weft string to go across. So here also he's putting, let's say, interlocking them one on top of each other to hold them so he can stick the ones across. So that would be like oreg. Now once he sticks the weft across, that's the next one. Arag, that is oreg. Now hatach lahar arigata. Now, after he finishes doing it, let's say he cuts the leftover, the stuff that's sticking out, to make them even, so that would be makeh bepatish, adding the final touches. So that would be 11. Now we said if you make a rim to this basket, so you have 13. Now she says vihaytelefume la'asot la'safa, to make a rim to it, hosif kan tofer. Well, you have to sew, let's say, stitch the rim around it, v'kosher, and you have to tie. She'tzarich l'kshor l'achar ha'tefirah. Because right after tefirah, in order so it doesn't come apart, you have to make a knot. So therefore you added two more, tefirah and kishirah. The only question is, why don't you just say, yachayam mishum boneh? Because bottom line, he built a basket. So that she said, mishum boneh leka lechayuvah. Lo b'chabit, v'lo b'taru, v'lo b'kaveret. Not in any of the three cases we mentioned, there's no boneh. Why? De'en binyan bekelim. So that she comes and says, Hidush, we have a rule. There is no binyan when it comes to vessels. Now, Tosafot questions this and says, no. We know there's a rule, en binyan bekelim. But what does en binyan bekelim mean? If you have a keli already, and now you start adding things to it, so that's en binyan bekelim. But here it's worse. Here you're creating a keli. You're building the keli, which means Tosfot argues on the way that she understands en binyan bekelim. That she understands boneh is not shayach by a keli. Boneh is shayach by, say, you're building a house, something that's a structure, a vessel. It's not shayach boneh. Tosfot says, no, that's not the cloud. Yes, I agree, en binyan bekelim. That means if you have a keli already, and now you're adding another link to it or another component to it, en binyan bekelim. But to create the keli from scratch? But that is what it's a Tosfot asked me, he doesn't answer it. Why shouldn't you be hayav for boneh as well? And then she just discusses another melacha that they don't get you on. He says, mafshit leka lememar bekanim. What about mafshit, which means it seems the kanim have on them, let's say, a shell that you have to peel off. So therefore, that should be skinning. So then she said, no, the end of shata ela be'or. Havshata only applies to leather, so you can't get him on havshata. Okay, so that's that as well. Okay, fine. We continue. Comes the Gemara and says, "Hagozez et hasemer v'hamlabeno." A person that shears the wool, v'hamlabeno, and he whitens it. Amar Rav Abba, Harav Chanan, Amar Rav Yochanan. Hatove semer she'al gabe behema b'shabbat hayov shalosh hataot. If a person spins the semer, the wool, while it's still attached to the animal's back on Shabbat, he is chayav shalosh hataot, he is chayav three. What are the three? Ehad mishum gozez. Well, eventually he's going to cut it off. Mm-hmm. So he's going to hayam because gozez, that's shearing. Ehad mishum menapetz. Well, obviously he had to comb it in order to allow him to spin it. So that's combing. Ehad mishum toveh. And one because of spinning. Rav Kana says, Rav Kana amar, en derech giziza bekach, ve en derech menapetz bekach, ve en derech tevia bekach. It's not the normal way to do this, which means you don't spin the wool when it's attached to the animal. That is not considered the normal derech of spinning. Normally, what do? First, you shear it. After you shear it off the animal, you comb it when it's off the animal. Then you spin it. This guy did everything in a not normal fashion. He combed it while it was on the animal. He spun it while it was on the animal. And only after he cut it off. You don't cut wool like that after it's spun. So even the gizizah is considered shelo kederech. Of course, he would agree to Afkar that it's asur. It's forbidden to do it. It's just that you're not going to be hayab because you did it in the not normal fashion. Comes the Gemara and says, Vela? No. Which means, you're telling me that's not the normal way? We have a statement that said, Rabbi Nehemia, Shatuf Ba'azim. They used to clean the wool when they were building the Mishkan while it was still attached to the animal, to the goats. Vetavu Ba'azim. And they used to spin it when it was still attached to the goats. Alma Tiviyah al Gabebehema Shema Tiviyah. So you see what? That must be considered the normal way because they did it when they built the Mishkan. Gemara says, Chokhmah Yetera Shani. Torah specifically says that this was expertise work done by specific craftsmen. God gave them, you know, very, very a great ability that most people do not have. And therefore, for the regular guy, that's not considered normal tiviyah. Even though in the Mishkan, it could be they had Chokhmah Yetera, but for everybody else, these guys are batla da'atam. These guys are, you know, they get lost in the majority of people that don't do it that way. Now let's just read Rashi for a second. When Rashi says, Shatuf ba'izim v'tavu ba'izim. How do they know that? That it was actually spun when it was attached. Rashi says, Kra kadarish. Actually, they're basing it on a pasuk, because the pasuk says, Tavu et ha'izim. They spun the goats. Now, what does that mean? They spun the goats. So the Gemara says, "Bigufan shelaizim mashmas matu," that they spun it when it was still on the goats. The Gemara answered. We continue. Rashi, "Chokhmah yetera." Now, this was excessive wisdom that these people had. Shenekidichtiv vechol isha hachmat lev. So that specifically says these ladies were hachmat lev. They possessed great wisdom. Aval lehidyot. But for a regular, spinner, that doesn't, it's not the normal way. And therefore, it's considered not normal. Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Atolesh et hakenaf. A guy now pulls off a feather off a bird. So the Tolesh, the Kanat, the Hakomto, and then he's Mekametit. Rashi says, after he cuts it off the animal, plucks it, I should say, off the bird, he cuts the head of it off. The head of the feather, as you know, is soft. Rashi says they would use the head of the feather to stuff pillows with. The Hakomto, the guy that cuts the top of the head off, the Morto, Morto, Rashi says, they would take the zanav of it, the tail, which means the bottom of the feather has some hairs on it. Those hairs are soft. So what he does is he shears the hairs off the bottom of the feather, the stick part of it. So it says hayav shalosh hataot. He's going to be hayav three hataot. Now, what is the three hataot? So I'm going to explain. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Is that the proper Gersa? Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Tolesh Chayav Mishum Gozes. Well, plucking it off the animal, that's Gozes. That's the Tolda of shearing. Just like shearing by a sheep, taking the wool off, so pulling the feathers off would be from Gozes. Kotem, cutting the top of the feather off, Chayav Mishum Mehatech. That is Mehatech. Now why is that Mehatech? Mehatech, we learned, is by the leather. That they used to cut it into specific sizes. Here also, you're cutting into a specific side because you only need the top of it, right? Because the top of it is soft, you place it into the to the pillow. So therefore, you're going to be hayav mishum mehatech. Now, Rashi just points out that the bottom you use as well. The hard part you'll use to put in hats, he says. So therefore, you really want to make a perfect cut, so you have the top for the pillows and the bottom to use for the hats. As she says, I'll just quote those, as she says, "Dekapid lachtoch ad makom shura'ui, vegam min hakaner," even from the stick itself, "ore kova'im," he weaves hats from them. "Ve'ose kova'im mekanfei of ve'lo se'ar." Memaret, now taking off those little hairs on the bottom of the feather, hayab mishum memahek, that is smoothening out, because bottom line, you're smoothening out the feather, just like in the Mishkan. Where did they memahek? On the leather, there were some little hairs. So they would take those little hairs off, that would smoothen out the leather. So taking off the little hairs, that would be considered memahek. The Ritba asks over here, what do you mean? Even taking off the hairs will be a melacha she'ena siricha legufa, because you don't need the smoothing of the feather. Right. You're doing it in order to get those little hairs to put in the pillows. But based on what Rashi just taught us, that they're able to use the bottom of the stick for the hat, so therefore it is a melacha siricha legufa, because you do need the smoothing out of the feather itself in order that it should be functional for the hat. So therefore you're going to be hayab mishum memahayeh. Comes the Gemara and continues. The Gemara says, "Hakosher v'matir." That's making knots and untying. Gemara says, "Keshira b'mishkan hecha havai." Where was there keshira? Where did they actually tie knots in the Mishkan? So Gemara says, "Amar Rava." Rava said, or actually change it to Rabba with a hair, "Sheken koshrim biyetedot." The Gemara says that they used to tie down the oil mo'ed with pegs, meaning, imagine you have the wall of the Mishkan, so you needed to, you know, make sure that it doesn't fall, so they put a peg behind it, so to speak, and you put a rope from the wall, let's say, to the peg, and you tie it on the peg, like you make a tent today, just like you would put a peg behind it to keep it from falling. So that's what they would do. So can't koshim be the doto alim. The Gemara says, "Hahu koshir aminat latirava." Gemara says, "What do you mean? That's not a permanent knot, because we know the Mishkan constantly moved, and it can move at any time, and therefore to be hayav, we know it's got to be a type of permanent knot. This type of knot over here is kosher aminat latir, which means they made the knot specifically in order to take it out, so it doesn't have the permanency to it." So Gemara says, "Ela mara baye sheken orge yiriot." The guys that were weaving the yiriot, those were the skins of the Mishkan, the curtains, let's say, of the Mishkan. Shenifseka lahen nima. If, let's say, a string during the process, it ripped, koshinota, so they would make a knot in order to, you know, to repair it. Amar le Rava, taratzta kosher. Alright, so he explained to us where they made permanent knots. If a string snapped during the weaving process, so they would just tie it so it doesn't unravel. Matir ma'ika lememar. So when did they have untying? So Gemara says, "V'chi tema." Maybe you'll tell me, "Di'i mitra eme le tre chute k'tre bahadeh hadadeh," which means sometimes in the weaving process, it was possible for them to have next to each other, because they always have to knot, let's say, the ends of it. So let's say two knots were right next to each other. So would it look nice? Which means they didn't measure it the correct way, let's say. It just came out, let's say, two knots back to back. So it's an eyesore. It doesn't look good. So what would they do? So it says, sharehad. So they would untie one of them, vekatarhad. And they would leave the one of them knotted. Which means when it says katarhad, it doesn't mean they would knot it, because it was knotted already. They would untie one of them, and they would leave one knotted. So the Gemara says, and then what would they do? They would obviously have to reroute the string that was on Nikos. Now it's going to unravel, so they would reroute it to put the knot somewhere else, so it was not next to each other. So the Gemara says, "Nah, that's where they used to unknot in the rare event where two knots in the weaving process came or the sewing process came next to each other. So they unknotted one and rerooted it." Gemara says, "Hashta lefne melech basar v'adam en osim ken lefne melech malchei malchim kadosh baruch hu osim," which means in a king's palace they wouldn't do such a thing to untie a knot, because just by untying the knot now, it leaves a hole. There's a gaping hole in the spot that you untie. It's not nice. Which means in the house of a king, they wouldn't do such a thing. So you're telling me in the house of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, they're going to untie it, which means if anything, they'll do the whole thing over again. Mm-hmm. They're not going to now leave a thing untied, and but they'll take out the whole stitch and put it somewhere else, and so sort of knots are not next to each other. So therefore, matir cannot be there. So Gemara says, "Elamar Abba, betimar Rabbi Elai, sheken sadeh halazon koshinu matirim." Goes back to the trappers of the halazon fish. Now the halazon fish was necessary in the Mishkan to take its blood in order to make the blue dye, which is the tchelet. Now they had to trap the halazon. Now, how do you trap the halazon? You have to make fish nets. Now, you make a fish net, you obviously have to make a knot. So therefore, the Gemara is telling you, when they made those fish nets in order to trap the halazon, they had to make the knots. Now, furthermore, when they adjust the traps to make them larger or smaller, they would untie the knots and make different ones, tie it back to each other. Now, she tells us, Rashi tells us in Dibur Matil Sedeh Halazon, three lines from the bottom, Litzboa Atechelet Bedamo, the Ukimin Dag Katan, it was a small fish, the Ole Achat Leshevim Shana, it would surface every 70 years. Koshinu Matirim Shekol Rishtot Asiot Kesherim Kesherim, all the nets were made out of knots. Then Keshne Kayama. And those knots over there were permanent knots. Uparish strictly tol chotin mereshet zu onosif azu matir mikan vekoshen mikan. Sometimes they would add more netting, let's say. So they would take from one net, they would untie the strings from one net and tie it to the other one. So it's not really adjusting, it's actually making them bigger, let's say. They would take from one net, untie the knots and add it. So then we had koshenu matir by the Halazon. Comes the Gemara and says, "Batofer shtei tefirot." One of the things on Shabbat that we said is forbidden is sewing two stitches. The Gemara says, "Ve'alo kaima." So what are you talking about? If you just sew two stitches, it doesn't stay. It's going to fall out. The Gemara says, "Amar Abba Bar Yochanan, Bar Yochanan ve'u shekashran." You have to say that it's talking about you made a knot at the end of it, which means if you don't make a knot at the end of it, so it's not going to stay. So to be Hayav Tofer, you actually have to also be Kosher at the end. So there's a different machloket exactly. If a guy does Tefirah, you're going to be Hayav Mishim, you're going to be Hayav 201. Some want to say that no, that's still considered the Melacha of Tefirah, that the Kishirah that follows the Tefirah, that's considered really just once. So I want to bring a proof from here, that the only type of knot that you hayav on Shabbat is if you tie two knots. And here since you're only tying one knot, so therefore that's not considered kosher. Kosher would be only if you did two knots. In any event, that would be the subject of Tefirah that's followed by a Kishirah.